Before we start today's time travel adventure, I want to recommend a podcast to you. It's called Pleasing Terrors. The host, Mike Brown, is a professional storyteller, having spent 2 decades scaring audiences with his tales. He's even been featured on the BBC, which I find pretty impressive. Pleasing Terrors is produced in a recording studio and is given the treatment with music and sound effects, and I know you can appreciate that. So go check out Pleasing Terrors by Mike Brown.
Some stories were never supposed to be told. Stories that exist in the twilight between science and the supernatural, between history and horror. Stories that speak of terrifying things. Stories that you want to hear. Stories that you need to hear. Stories that will sink their teeth in and never let you go. My name is Mike Brown, and this is Pleasing Terrors.
You wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Today, we have something new for you. Listener and author Josh Hutchins has offered his talents as a writer and has created a time travel story for you set in the Twilight Histories universe. Josh has written a novel called Daxo James, Colony of the Disloyal. He's an Air Force Academy grad, a history major, law student, and he lives in Oklahoma. He also has 3 girls, which is something I can relate to. So please enjoy this first guest story, written and recorded by Josh Hutchins, and edited by myself.
I tell myself, I'm ready for this. The Twilight Histories agent walks into the room and looks me up and down. I feel like a fool, standing here in a room of clean white panels while I wear chainmail and a wool cloak. The room smells sterile, and the walls throb with the reverberating background hum of hidden electronics.
Are you ready?
I swallow.
Well, I thought I was. Until just now.
I wipe my brow, but there isn't any sweat. It's a reflex, more than anything.
It's okay to be nervous on your first journey. Your friend has done this many times,
she says softly, evaluating me over the top of her thick-rimmed glasses. She swipes a finger across the data tablet she carries.
Just tell me this is for real, not some holo simulator or mere signals input into my brain. I mean, it's real, right? I'm really gonna go? Well, because if it's not, I could just go to a holo suite and lose myself for a few hours, and it'll be much cheaper than this. I assure you, it's real. What did your friend tell you?
I blow out a large breath.
He said it's legit.
I look at the floor, then at my shaking hands, clenching them and rubbing them together.
Let's begin your orientation. It will help calm your nerves.
She gives an awkward smile. I nod, then bounce my head from side to side, trying to stretch the tension out of my neck.
You're going back to medieval England, only
It isn't called England in this timeline. The kings of Wessex, after Alfred, failed to retake their island back from the Danes, causing them to shake off Christianity and revert to paganism. When William of Normandy came to the island in 1066, he battled the Danes, not the Saxons. Though his army was victorious at Hastings, his campaign turned into a slog, both sides unable to defeat the other. When Harold Godwinson assumed the throne of Wessex, he launched a campaign that pushed both the Normans and the Danes into the sea. Several Welsh kingdoms swore their allegiance to him, adding Longbowmen to his formidable arsenal. A series of brilliant Saxon kings delivered victory after victory as huge swaths of land fell under the dominion of Wessex. She pauses to look at me. King Harold VI, or Emperor Harold, as he is sometimes called, has ruled for many years, but his health is failing. He rules all the British Isles, as well as Norway, Denmark, the Lowlands, Brittany, Normandy, even the islands of Sicily and Corsica in the Mediterranean Sea. Recently, armies of Wessex smashed the Franks and captured Calais. The Christians living there were massacred. Harold's armies now encircle the great Christian city of Paris and have placed it under a tight siege. The entire Christian world, led by the Byzantines, holds its breath and seems to have united against Wessex. The popes never called for crusades into the Holy Land during this timeline. The real threat is from the pagans of the West. Are you sure this is a good place to send me? I mean, I want adventure in the Middle Ages, sure. But is this... Our agent has assured us this world is safe for you. We're placing you in the house of a nobleman named Lord Wulfrod. One of his men, a warrior named Thrall, will keep an eye on you as much as he can. He's smart and perceptive, good with a sword and shield. Just stick close to him and you'll be fine. This will be an experience you'll never forget. Her smile doesn't make me feel better. Now, step onto the platform and we'll get you on your way. Remember, these are a pagan warrior people. Whatever social conventions you may have learned from our history, well, that may not apply to this world we're sending you to. She looks at me, and her eyes seem to bore into my skull. Then she leans in close and whispers into my ear, "Enjoy." The sky is so dark, I can't tell what time of day it is, or if it's even daytime at all. The frequent gusts of wind buffet my dark red cloak, and the chainmail armor beneath it is cold to the touch. I've been riding a slow horse for hours through a winter forest. Lord Wulfrod, how much further? I shiver at the words. The rider in front of me turns aside and looks at me with eyes that seem to glow in the dim light. His iron helmet gives him an otherworldly look.
Not long.
He waves me to ride alongside him.
I've been meaning to talk to you. What has it been? 3 months since you stumbled out of the woods and nearly drowned in my moat?
I smile. Yes, Lord.
Well, we're almost there now, and I probably won't have time to discuss it. But I want you to join my household.
I pause and slowly turn to look at him. He senses my apprehension.
Not as a knight or warrior or anything like that. More like a... Well, we'll talk about it later.
He smacks me on the shoulder. Ha ha! I unleash a beaming smile. Lord, you haven't told us what we're doing.
Not me, at least. You'll see soon enough. Just stick close to Thrall. He's the best swordsman I've ever known. Lightning reflexes. I fought with him on the islands in the Central Sea, and again in Brittany. Probably saved my life there. He's been my envoy to the king for well over a year now. He doesn't know his letters, though.
He seems to frown as he looks into the darkness of the woods around us. Lord, I've only just met him. He's been gone nearly the entire time that I've been a guest at your household.
Yes, he lost his family somewhere near Jerusalem and journeyed west to get away. When we met on Sicily, he stuck with me. It's just...
His horse whinnies, and he turns back to the front as we and dozens of others begin ascending a gentle, sparsely wooded ridge on a horse.
Enough about that for now, he says, waving his hand.
When we finally reach the top, he holds up a gloved fist, and all the horses form a line abreast of him. From here, I can see the lights of a town in the deep blue distance. Hundreds of torches. Thousands. Some on houses, and many more on the castle at the center.
We're here,
Lord Wolfrod announces in a husky voice. I shudder and pull the cloak tied around my neck. When Lord Wolfrod's horse moves again, mine follows without prompting. It takes another hour, and as we approach, I hear muffled voices coming from the homes outside the town, laughing, arguing, but mostly crying.
Sounds like the folks in Winchester's up late.
A man wearing a cloak as dark as antimatter rides up alongside me. He has a slightly cone-shaped helmet that glints in the firelight. His long mustache accents a mischievous smile, and his asymmetric sword bounces on his thigh as he bumps along on his mount. He is accompanied by a strong smell of ale and horse sweat.
What do you mean? I look from him to the town. I mean, they'd normally be sleeping now. It's the middle of the night. Must have been some bad news since we left Exeter.
The Emperor? Do you think there will be trouble?
Heh, let Lord Wolfrod worry about that. You just keep your eyes on anyone with a sword or an axe. Don't matter if they're Saxon or not.
Lord Wolfrod hails the guards atop the stone walls as our string of horsemen near the town. The walls seem impossibly tall, probably 100 feet of polished gray stone. As smooth as glass. The oaken gate slowly strains open on screeching iron hinges. My horse follows Lord Wolfrod's with its head down. The streets are lined with people, thousands of them, all red-faced, with wild and terrified looks in their eyes. The stone houses are more like apartment buildings. Each of them at least 5 stories tall. The wide open space we had enjoyed on the trip vanishes as the buildings close in and bear down on us. There is an oppressive odor of smoke and herbs, which seems to be an attempt to mask the stench of feces. When we reach the castle at the center of town, it makes the city walls look like a picket fence. Its top pushes through the clouds, like 24th century skyscrapers of titanium and carbon fiber. The outer walls bristle with armed men. Some of them have swords, others longbows. When they look at us, they seem to stare right through our bodies. Nobody makes a sound. All I hear is the crackling of torches, horse hooves on the cobblestone, and the dull clinking of body armor. Lord Wulfrod turns to look at us as he dismounts his horse. Behind, in the distance, I see another group of mounted men entering the city. The screeching of the gate echoes like an angry witch's scream.
"Just stay close and keep your eyes open," Thrall whispers to me.
Our party is escorted inside the castle to the large hall at the entrance. It's walled with timber, and at the far end, there's a large golden chair, a throne. It seems to glow in the torchlight. The room is nearly full of people, all wearing armor and cloaks. Lord Wulfrod walks slowly towards the throne. I start to follow him, but Thrall grabs me and pulls me to the side with all the others.
"Only the Wotan has part in this ceremony."
"Ceremony? What is..." "Shh," someone nearby says to me with a glare. I watch Lord Wulfrod as he approaches the throne. Now that my eyes have adjusted, I can see there is a person seated in it. He's dressed in a white tunic with a jeweled crown on his head, and he seems to be slumped to the side. Lord Wulfrod draws a small dagger from his belt and points it towards the seated figure. He steps up on the throne's raised platform and thrusts the dagger forward. I can hear the knife thump into the man's chest, even from this far away. My body jolts and I catch my breath. Thrall gives me a sidelong grin. Lord Wulfrod turns to face the assembled congregation and announces to the room,
"Harald, son of Harald, king and emperor of Wessex, is dead. So say I, Lord Wulfrod, Thane of Exeter."
He turns and pulls his dagger out of the king's chest, then wipes the blade on a cloth he keeps beneath the folds of his cloak. He steps to the side and joins the growing throng of nobles who line the walls of the great hall. I stand there nearly motionless in silence. The only sound is the death confirmation of each noble as he arrives throughout the night and repeats Lord Wulfrod's actions. There are nobles and dignitaries from all over the empire to witness this, along with the Franks, Arabs, Italians, even Byzantine Romans.
In time, pale streaks of light shine through the few small windows in the hall.
After a young Scottish noble completes the death verification ceremony, one of the king's heralds walks to the center of the large room. All eyes are on him, and I can feel the tension and exhaustion in the thick air. Many begin to whisper. He raises a hand, and a hush descends on the room.
"We are all now in accord. King Harald is dead. in the year of the Christian Lord, 1189. May his soul go to be with the gods.
He pauses and looks around the room.
However, as our Lord has now passed without an heir, the Witan will meet at nightfall on the morrow to decide the next Emperor of Wessex. I pray the gods will guide us in our task.
Some people whisper, "Amen," and the assembled crowd begins to disperse.
"Come on," Thrall says to me as he slaps me on the shoulder. "All the good ale will be gone if we don't find a place to stay soon."
Thrall ties the reins of both our horses to a stunted tree outside a grayish-tan building. As we walk inside, I place my hand on the walls. "Huh, concrete," I remark under my breath. Thrall looks at me with curious eyes as we both sit down at a long wooden table. Warm flames crackle in a fireplace across the room, and a short man in a brown tunic places two plates of steaming food in front of us. "Thank you," I say to the man. He bows without speaking, then slithers out of sight. "Thrall, should I feel nervous about all this?" He squints at me and takes a bite of his bread.
"Did nobody tell you?"
I stare at him blankly. He furrows his brow.
"Lord Wolfrod's most likely the next king of Wessex."
I recoil, my eyes wide open, suddenly aware of my own breathing.
So are we supposed to be guarding him or something? "Yes. The Romans are the ones we have to watch most,"
he says with a mouthful of bread.
"What?"
Thrall gives me an annoyed look.
"Romans. Most especially Lexios. He's here for the crown."
"How? He isn't even a Saxon." Thrall furrows his brow again and looks around the room as if he's checking if others heard me.
"Alexios is the emissary from the Roman Emperor himself, and he's backed by the Pope. Between them and the Franks, they may have enough money to buy off every thane in the Witan. They'll use gold to get to the crown. I don't think it'll work, though. They'll need to do more."
Thrall stares at the table for a moment. "Why don't they just go to war with us then?"
"Ha! Romans got a taste of the longbow and the huscarl several years ago in Sicily. I was there. You can bet they just don't want to try that again."
He takes another drink.
"Saxons are mostly pagan. Rest of the world isn't. Not the Romans, or the Pope anyway. I think they're afraid we'll take all of Francia. They've been helping them, you know. Helping the Franks fight us. Most people don't know that."
The small man returns with a pitcher and two earthenware cups. As he begins to pour ale into a cup, it slips from his fingers. Thrall snatches it before it can hit the ground.
"Oh, I'm so sorry. Thank you,"
the man says, as Thrall hands him the cup. A small chain with a crucifix dangles around Thrall's neck. It must have slipped out when he bent down. He follows my stare and quickly forces the cross back behind his cloak. His eyes look angry and terrified. He drains the cup at once and pushes it away.
"Get some rest."
He leaves two copper coins on the table and goes up a staircase in the back of the room.
I take a few minutes to finish my meal, and as I start to get up, Lord Wolfrod enters. He pulls his hood off his head, revealing a mash of bushy gray hair. He holds up a hand.
Don't mind me. If you want to go to get some sleep, it's fine.
He sits where Thrall had been a minute before.
I'm just hungry.
The small man shuffles to the table. Lord, I am so sorry, but it will take a few minutes to warm some food for you. Lord Wolfrod reaches out and places a hand on his shoulder.
What's your name?
It's Varric, Lord.
Varric. Well, Varric, do you have a family?
Yes, Lord. Varric looks at the floor.
I'm sure you'd rather be with them than feeding a grumpy old Dane. Just bring out what you have, hot or cold. I'll eat it. Bring some ale, too, if you have any.
Lord Wolfrod takes Varric by the wrist and places 5 silver pieces in his palm, then pushes his fingers close around them.
May God or the gods be with you,
Lord Wolfrod says. Varric looks at his hand like it's magical. He stands there, stupefied.
But I would like to eat tonight, Varric,
Lord Wolfrod says, with a wide smile. Oh, yes, Lord. I'll be right out. Hindley sprints to the back of the inn. That was a lot of money, I say. He shrugs.
I've been blessed in my life.
A moment later, Varric returns.
Thank you, Varric. This will do just fine. Have a good night.
Varric bows deeply and walks away. Lord Wolfrod pours a glass of ale and pushes it towards me before pouring one for himself. Then he holds up his glass.
To King Harald, may he go in peace. And to the next king of Wessex, may he rule with wisdom and strength.
I raise my glass to his, and he locks eyes with me for what seems like an eternity.
Drink hail,
I reply, and we both take a large swig. Lord, if I may, what was the purpose of stabbing the king last night?
I mean, he was already dead.
He nods, with his lips pursed, as if considering my words.
Because the nobles, especially members of the Witan, have to be certain. They want to see it for themselves. If the king isn't dead after being stabbed in the chest, well, we'd have another problem, wouldn't we?
He smiles and tears at the piece of bread with his teeth.
Yes, we would, I reply with a chuckle. I thought you were staying close to Thrall while we were here in Winchester, he says.
Oh, yes, Lord. He went upstairs just before you got here. To bed, I think. He sighs, studying his ale for some time.
I miss home. And my little ones. I don't like any of this.
Any of what, Lord? He gives me a sideways look.
People offering me money from the shadows. Rumors of... Never mind.
He shakes his head and takes another drink. When are we leaving?
Tomorrow, I pray. I want to get back to Exeter as soon as possible. There may be a baby when we get back.
He raises an eyebrow and smiles. Are you hoping for a son, Lord? He beams.
I don't care. Daughters may not be heirs, but they are a joy all the same.
He puts down his cup.
You know, I'm a good judge of character, and there's something about you I like. There's a spark in you, a wit. I want you to stick with me in Exeter. I could use someone with brains to go along with their muscles. We never got to finish our talk earlier. I will treat you well and pay you fairly. What do you say?
I'd be happy to, my lord.
Excellent! I've never seen you swing a sword, but there are more important things. Can you read or write?
Yes, Lord, I could do both quite well. I used to type 90 words per minute, I beam stupidly. He squints.
I'm not sure what that means, but it sounds like you know your letters. What did you do before this?
I fix things. Machines. I was a mechanic of sorts.
A mechanic?
Yes, Lord. It's like building things, only not buildings, but tools.
Oh, like a smith. A blacksmith.
He asks, seemingly delighted. Crap. What corner was I painting myself into now? Maybe I could help find ways to make people more efficient? Make them able to do more work? He shrugs.
Like how?
I could build a machine that harvests wheat without so much hard labor, or mills it into flour. Maybe a device that would heat iron ore faster, using water power or something. He grins and taps his head.
Ah, you see? I was right about you. Well, you have my attention, young man.
He leans back against his chair.
Tell me more.
I lean back too, satisfied with myself. He and I talk for quite some time as he quizzes me about my ideas. And when the wine flows more freely, we tell stories and jokes, discuss our families, our childhoods, and eventually, he lays several more silver coins on the table.
Make sure to pay Varric for staying here.
He motions me with his head to leave.
It's been a long night, and now a long morning. Go get some sleep.
I wake at dusk. The bedroll on the floor wasn't much for comfort, but it was warm. I groan, rubbing my temples.
I miss my hangover meds.
I force myself out of bed and out of the room.
Good morning,
Varric says to me as I walk down the stairs and strap my sword and belt under my cloak. I say nothing at first, but then turn to him. Have you seen Thrall, my friend, this morning? He seems to cower and look away when he answers.
No, Lord, I have not. I did...
He hesitates and looks at me. I squinch my brow.
I did see him leave just after you went to bed, Lord, but not since then.
Thank you. I deposit several silver pieces into his hand, and he bows low to the ground and shuffles away, a glowing and delighted look on his face. I walk down to the streets of Winchester, towards the castle. It was impressive at night, but during the day, it's simply unbelievable. Shimmering white towers reach up for hundreds of feet into the sky. I wonder how they built those without modern materials. After all this rite of succession nonsense, I plan to inspect those towers. The city walls gave the impression that we're in a giant soup bowl. There are so many people here. Thousands and thousands. A horse-drawn wagon goes by with a load of bricks, and it wafts the rank miasma of sewage into my face. It brings me focus, and I avoid looking at the dizzying tall buildings and towers for the rest of my walk. As I pass a market full of meats and breads, I spot Thrall, standing near the rear of a booth. We make eye contact, and he turns away. He has that same skittish look again, just like last night. It seems like he's talking to someone behind the booth, but I can't see who it is. I feel as though I'm intruding, so I go on my way. As I cross over a narrow alleyway, a man in a red and yellow tunic comes from behind the market booths and runs right into me.
I'm sorry, I didn't...
Watch what you're doing,
he snaps. He clutches a scroll of paper in one hand and quickly pushes the necklace back into his tunic. I watch his hand intently. Maybe you better watch what you're doing, I say, with a sly smile. He shoves me to the ground. His face is pocked with scars and twisted in anger. Looking down at me, he says, I'll kill you, heathen scum. People are stopping to watch, hoping for a fight. The man glares at me, then turns and disappears into the crowd. I push myself up on my elbows. The point of a curved sword pokes my chest.
What did you see?
Thrall's eyes beam into me like a particle accelerator. Then he looks from side to side over his shoulder. I don't know what you mean.
In the alley, when I was talking to that man, what did you see?
His posture is wild, and his jaw muscles bulge as he breathes heavily, like an angry bull. I only saw you talking to someone. I didn't even know it was that guy until you told me just now. I'm sorry if I intruded on your...
You saw nothing. Do you understand? Nothing.
He adjusts his cloak and belt, and I'm suddenly aware of the cold and the stench of urine.
Everyone's on edge right now.
He leans forward and bears down on his sword.
Just be careful what you're doing.
I get that, but yesterday you told me to keep my eyes open.
Not on me, guts it.
He softens his stance.
Come on, let's go to the castle. Lord Wolfrod will be looking for us soon.
The castle is bustling with activity. Guards and servants walking everywhere with hurried steps, and there is constant talking among separate groups of people all around the hall. Thrall and I stand inside the entrance and survey the scene. The king's body has been removed from the golden throne. I don't see Lord Wolfrod, I say. Thrall gestures toward a door along the outside wall, then walks away, joining a group of Welshmen. I squint at him as he adjusts his belt. Not wanting to stand there awkwardly, I amble around the room, checking out the antechambers and apses as I go. Without thinking, I lift the latch on the door Thrall indicated and walk inside. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. It's okay. I was just finishing my prayers, says a strangely accented voice. He's kneeling, but soon crosses himself and stands. The room is bare, save for two bulky candlestands, a wooden device to kneel on, and a large crucifix at the back wall, glowing in the flickering candlelight. He catches my eyes wide and lingering on the cross and levels his gaze at me. Do you know what that is? He nods his head to the rear, and I nod in reply. Then you now know that I am not a pig and like you Saxons. I say nothing, only stare. The smoke from the candles makes my eyes water. Who are you?
My name is Alexios. I have traveled here from Constantinople. I represent our emperor, also named Alexios, ruler of the Eastern Roman Empire.
He gives a flourish with his hand.
And I'm a Christian. There are others here in Wessex. They just have to be quiet about it.
Quiet? Like they have to pray in secret or something? Alexios says nothing.
But this room, it's... Yes, King Harald was a Christian as well. At least in private.
Why are you telling me this? He takes a step towards the wall
and places his hands on a large leather-bound book sitting on a wooden shelf that I didn't notice earlier.
"Because I think I can trust you. Thrall tells me I can. Can I trust you?"
He gives me a strangely sinister look.
"Thrall? I don't even know you. I mean, we just met. Do I call you Lord or Alexios, or
that does not matter right now?" He looks at the back of his hands for a moment, then gives a nod to a man who'd been hiding in the shadows behind me. The door latch clicks, and the man steps into the light. His scarred face is illuminated clearly. Next, I hear metal scrape along his scabbard as he slowly draws his iron sword. My heart beats in my ears.
"I guess you can trust me."
I back away from him and instinctively raise my hands.
"Well, none of us has a choice now, do we?"
He pushes his cloak behind his hip, revealing the jeweled hilt of his own sword.
"What do you want?"
My voice trembles. He takes his hand off the book and moves back towards the center of the room.
"You are one of Lord Wulfthryth's men, no? I want to know about him. Is he a pagan or a Christian?"
"I don't know if he's a pagan or not, but he is a good man."
"I see. Well, what do you know about your friend Thrall?"
I think he's a Christian. Maybe." Alexios flashes a glare at the other man.
"He knows."
My hands jerk upward towards the back of my skull in a reflex. Then the room goes suddenly dark. My forehead throbs when I come to. I blink my eyes and try to get up. There's a pool of blood and another puddle of drool on the floor beneath my face.
"Hello?"
I try to force out the word, but a gag muffles the sound of my voice. My hands are bound behind my back, and my shoulders ache. What were they talking about? I must see Lord Wulfthryth. He needs to know about this. I can hear faint voices coming from the other side of the door. The Witan has convened. I struggle against the ropes until my wrists burn as the skin is rubbed away. The lights flicker on the stone walls, making it feel like a dungeon from the movies. I inch my way to the nearest candle stand like a worm. Then I kick it with my bound feet. It falls to the floor with a clatter. Surely someone heard that. I roll over and start to fumble with a still-burning candle behind my back. It's a miracle it didn't go out when it fell. I just need to burn the ropes a little. A hissing sound accompanies the sharp pain in my forearm, causing me to drop the candle. It goes out and splashes hot wax on the back of my hands.
Must get out of here.
I roll over to the wall and place my face on the lowest stone. Using nearly every muscle in my body and my face to gain purchase on the wall, I stand up. Then I hop to the other candle stand and raise my wrist up as high as my aching shoulders will allow. The flame burns me until the ropes finally snap. I remove the gag and nearly cry out, but I think better of it. I quickly unbind my feet and reach for the dagger in its sheath in my belt beneath my cloak, but it's missing, along with my sword.
I need a weapon, something. So I pick up one of the candle stands and hold it like a spear. But it's just too heavy and bulky. I shake my head and rush to the door, and I open it with caution. There are men standing there with their backs to me. The great hall is filled with people, looking towards the golden throne. I try to politely and discreetly join the congregation to see what's happening. I gasp. Lord Wulfrod is walking towards the throne, where a small group of people await him. One holds a wooden box with a lid open. Opposite him is Thrall, standing stiffly. At the center is a man with a tall, odd-shaped hat and a red robe encrusted with jewels. A semicircle of powerful Saxon nobles and foreign dignitaries stand behind them. Every torch in the kingdom must be in here, and the smell of smoke is so thick, you can almost taste it. One of the foreigners looks at me, directly at me. It's Alexios. He looks to the other side of the room, and there I see the Roman guard looking at him. I quickly step behind a pillar. I put my back against it and breathe. Should I leave? Run? I let out an audible sigh. Lord Wulfrod is a good man, I whisper to myself. When I move back into the crowd, I see Lord Wulfrod kneeling in front of the man with a big hat. But the Roman is gone. A moment later, I spot him. He's moving towards the focus of the ceremony. I can see Alexios looking at him, while trying to appear calm. It's obvious to me, even at this distance. The man in the tall hat takes a silver crown out of the wooden box and holds it high in the air. A beam of light seems to touch it, causing it to glow. He utters an incantation or something, then slowly lowers the crown onto Lord Wulfrod's head. The Roman moves closer. I step back out of the crowd and go behind, making my way towards him. Closer. Closer. Oh, hail King Wulfrod, the man in the big head announces, and the hall echoes with the reply, Oh, hail King Wulfrod. The Roman leaps forward and draws a dagger from beneath his cloak. He rushes towards Wulfrod. I snap a glance at Alexios in the back of the room. His eyes are wide, with his mouth gaping open. Instinct seems to take a hold of me, and I rush to the king from the other side. Thrall draws his sword in a flash. He raises it high as the Roman approaches. When he brings it down, the Roman dodges to the side, and Thrall splits the wooden box in two. His blow continues until his sword nearly buries itself into the stone with a reverberating clang. The Roman shoves him aside, raises the dagger and shouts, Death to pagans! He brings it down like an avalanche of hatred. It makes a thud and sinks several inches into the thick leather-bound book I hold in my outstretched arms over the king's head. The Roman tries to withdraw the dagger, but it's stuck, and I won't let go of the book. Then he slaps me with the back of his gloved hand. Protect the king! Someone blasts. Nobles and guards race to the Roman. Moments later, the would-be assassin's head is slumped to his chest as he is dragged away in silence. Thrall looks at me with wild eyes, just like earlier. Alexios joins the others as they form a wall around King Wulfrod. His face fights against making an expression, but he looks at me with disgust. The new king picks up the book I used to stop the dagger and looks at me. He gives me a nod. I try to nod in reply, but I start falling through the floor.
I mouth the words, "Lord, you are in danger." But no sound escapes my lips. The last thing I see is Alexios' face, twisting into a smile. Everything disappears. Collapse onto the cold white floor, the dull hum of electronics, the sterile air. I force myself up on shaky arms when I see the Twilight History's tech approaching. No, 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 no! Lord Wulfrod, the king, he's in danger. My breathing slows, and I slump back to the floor. Instantly, I know I'm addicted. I have to go back.
Thank you for listening to the Twilight Histories. I hope you enjoyed this first guest story by Josh Hutchins. If you want to get in touch with him, check out his Facebook page by doing a search for Josh Hutchins. You can also leave a comment for him through the Twilight Histories Facebook and Twitter accounts. Do you have an idea for a Twilight Histories time travel adventure story? We're taking submissions. Yes, that's right. Your story could get the royal treatment and be listened to by tens of thousands of fans. Please go to the website at twilighthistories.com for details on how to submit your story. Before you go, there's a podcast you have to check out.
Horror Radio rises from the dead.
Who knew you could pull that much of a man's brain out through the eye socket? A little keepsake for you there, Doc.
Jesus, Harvey. What kind of monster are you?
I don't know enough about those things to say.
What do you know?
Just a bunch of old wives' tales and trucker stories.
There's too many voices here! Too many dead souls! I have to leave now!
Serena, you're very sick!
They're trying to pull me back, don't you see?
Campfire Radio Theater.
You're crazy!
Oh, not at all. The whole system works quite well, except for the patients, of course. The process tends to destroy brain cells, leaves them lacking in emotion, and, shall we say, somewhat simpler than we started.
Hear the fear at www.campfireradiotheater.com.
There's something behind me. Oh, dear God. Oh, no.